It's been a long week. We talked about curfews, Title I school funding, and we looked back 20 years to the moment when a bomb exploded in Centennial Olympic Park. Now it's time to let all that go, sit back, relax, and celebrate Friday. Let's head into the break room.
Orange mocha frappuccino!
I wake up every morning in a house that was built by slaves.
Is that your VCR? Oh my God.
By crikey, she's a gnarly little Sheila.
Joining us in the break room, Eric Siegel is constitutional law professor at Georgia State University. Kathy Lohr, former NPR correspondent. HB Cho is a reporter for The Korean Daily. And Kalina Bowler is co-host of the Real Snobs podcast. Welcome back, everybody. Happy Friday.
Thank you. Happy Friday. Great to be here.
We were going to start with some local news. This has surprised a number of people. The Georgia Court of Appeals recently ruled that upskirting is legal. Now, upskirting is when someone puts a camera under a woman's skirt, unbeknownst to her, and either takes a picture or takes a video of her private parts. Here's what happened. The court tossed out a previous conviction against a grocery store employee who was caught in the act. Georgia law states upskirting is only a crime when it's done in, quote, any private place and out of public view, end quote. The man's attorneys argued the woman was entitled to no reasonable expectation of privacy because she was in a public space, even though what he filmed were places of her body that she had chosen to cover. The court agreed with the man and his attorney. So, Eric, we have to start with you. You're the lawyer here.
I blame Justice Scalia for this. The truth is, first of all, obviously in Georgia, there has to be a law against going out in a public place, taking a camera and filming a woman's private parts.
Yeah.
That it has to be. And in fact,
there is not yet.
Well, the court said there was not. Three dissenting judges in the Court of Appeals said there was. And there was, because there's a law in Georgia that says you cannot take pictures of someone without their consent in, quote, a private place. And the court could have interpreted that to mean, as it should have, a person's private parts. Instead, the court used a very narrow conception, shorn out of context, of what this statute means, something Scalia had been pleading for years and years and years, and many of his disciples agree with. There was more than enough space here for judges of reasonable ability to say this man should be punished for what he did. And here's the main reason. He knew what he did was wrong. We're not talking about a statute here that's so vague and you're not sure if what you're doing is wrong. What made him think he could dive under a woman and take a picture of her private parts? The answer is nothing.
But the courts have said in other states as well that this is not that doesn't apply. It's a new kind of technology, and they're being very specific to the law. And I don't agree with it, obviously. But I think that the state needs to make it clear that this is illegal, and I think they need to do it immediately in the upcoming session.
I have a question. So if the same woman was actually displaying her private parts in public place, wouldn't she have been possibly charged with public indecency?
Possibly. But Kathy, to your point, the law changes, the law evolves, and I don't think you should punish people for things they don't know are wrong or illegal. But this guy dove under her skirt four times and took
pictures. It is interesting what HB Cho says, though, because if she had just not been wearing pants or underwear, she probably would have been arrested and charged. But
it's upskirting. It's called upskirting for a reason. Like, let this happen to a man wearing a kilt just one time. You know what I mean? Like, this, then we would not be having this discussion anymore.
Well, or if it happened to a child.
Right. Thank you. That would be a wholly different matter. And I want to say that Massachusetts, Texas, and New Jersey have already enacted new laws that specifically prohibit the upskirting.
Well, we'll see if our legislators act respond.
When they act, yeah.
But since we're talking about recording, remember these?
What would you call a video recorder that has everything?
I'm calling smart.
It's a Zenith VHS with extraordinary VHS hi-fi stereo.
Smart.
Plus a remote that can control both the deck and the TV.
Controls both? That's smart.
The last known company that still makes VCRs, video cassette replayers, is going out of business. The company says it plans to stop production by the end of this month because of a drop in sales. And I wonder how many of you still own a videotape?
Yes.
For purposes.
Do you still own a player with which to play it?
No. Not anymore.
So, look, it's time to transfer all that to digital.
It's time consuming, though, doing all the transfers and things. You know?
Yeah, you have to get
Yeah.
It's gone.
It's gone, I know. But you have to get the special one that has both the DVD slot and the VHS slot. And then it just, it takes a long time.
There are companies that do that.
I know there's companies that do that. But it's, you know, it can get expensive.
Pretty soon the DVD is going to go the way.
This is basically a public service announcement. If you own videotapes, it is time to digitize them.
I feel so insecure being a millennial and having at least half of my life's all the photographs and whatnot being somewhere on the internet, right? So I know if I want to go back to those photos, I can somehow find my way to those 15 years.
Oh,
but previously,
right.
Before that, whatever that's on my VHS tapes, when I was really young and whatnot, it's all gone.
Yeah,
now.
Yeah.
It's pretty gone. Much.
Yeah. All right. Well, there'll probably be a lot of photos taken. Well, there have been a lot of photos taken of gators in Georgia. Thousands of people. They're expecting over 10,000 people, actually, to apply for permits to hunt gators in Georgia. So which among you, first of all, would apply for one of these permits? Which one of you wants to hunt a gator?
No.
I would. I didn't, but I would.
Okay.
I would.
And how many of you have eaten gator?
I have.
And? Please don't say tastes
salty
like chicken.
Salty frog.
I have not had frog.
Frog's legs? You haven't had frog's legs?
I have not. HB?
It depends.
There's a restaurant in Athens, Georgia that serves a burger with gator patty. That's called Gator Hater.
Very appropriate.
So yeah, actually that tasted good because that was on the game day between Florida and Georgia. So that tasted pretty good.
Had gator bites. Gator bites are pretty good.
Yeah,
that's just the meat cut up and fried. Yeah,
I hear though there's two. It depends on what part of the gator you eat. Some of it tastes more like frog legs, and some of it tastes more like chicken. I hate to say that, but there are recipes for etouffee stew. Gator bites all over the internet.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Okay. So I personally, this is a revelation to me because I didn't realize Georgia had enough gators to justify a hunt because they're giving out thousands of permits.
May I suggest that's because you spend most of your time in Atlanta and not in other parts
of Georgia? Yeah, I'm in Savannah all the time.
There are gators there.
Yeah, I was about to say, but I didn't realize there was enough where they would say, oh, we need a few thousand taken out of the population.
Yeah, we remember talking about a gator showing up at the beach in Savannah a couple of weeks ago on the same show, right?
So that's right.
So I guess that was taken as a surprise of some kind. And yeah, it does surprise me too.
Have any of you seen a gator in Georgia?
I have not.
You have?
Southern Georgia.
Pictures where it didn't happen. Okay, yes.
Well, I was actually going on, rattlesnake hunts and things like that.
What?
So
wait.
That was first story. But there, in those same Southern Georgia areas, there are gators. I mean, there was a gator in a park just, you know, that the locals were saying, don't go to that park because they'll be out there by the swing sets.
I don't hunt at all, and I don't. But can we just hunt roaches? Can we get people to get and hunt
there
roaches?
We go. They're called exterminators.
Yeah, they don't work. They don't work.
Okay, someone once told me about that. Make your peace with the South.
Yeah.
All right. Well, if any of you out there listening have had an encounter with a gator in Georgia, Florida doesn't count, or New Orleans, for that matter, needs to be in Georgia. We want to see the pictures and hear the story, and especially if you were on a rattlesnake hunt. You were going to eat the rattlesnakes?
No. It was just interviewing a guy that did that for a living.
I feel like this is going to need to be an entirely different conversation. But if those of you out there have a gator story or you're planning to hunt gators in Georgia, we definitely want to hear from you and get the pictures. You can tweet us at OST Talk. You can post on Facebook or just call us and leave a message at 404-500-9457. We are hanging out in the break room right now. My guests are Eric Siegel of Georgia State, Kathy Lohr, former NPR correspondent, HB Cho of Korean Daily, and Kalina Baller of the Real Snobs podcast. And of course, a big thank you as always to Savannah Coffee Roasters. They donate the coffee that is fueling our break room guests this morning, at least their minds. You can find them online at savannahcoffee.com. And since we're on the subject of coffee, it turns out either fewer people are drinking Starbucks or the people who do drink it are drinking less. The company CEO thinks he knows why.
We don't want to use the current situation and the uncertainty and the pressure on the consumer as an excuse. But there's no doubt that we are navigating through a very unusual time.
That is Starbucks CEO Howard Schultz in an interview with CNBC. And by unusual time, what he meant was the election year, recent acts of terrorism, and police brutality. But we wondered, does coffee consumption, is it tied to political issues? What is driving down Starbucks numbers for real?
I don't think that any social or political turmoil is leading to their downturn.
No, you don't buy it.
Coffee sales. No, no. In fact, I think probably journalists drink more coffee during election year,
it's true.
If anything. But I think that it has something to do with their marketing and how they've changed. They're not the small coffee shop atmosphere that they used to be anymore.
I was in New York a few months ago. There were about six Starbucks in a five-block radius, literally. I'm not making that up. One block Starbucks, next block Starbucks. They're going through a cycle. It's a business cycle. It has nothing to do with the American consumer. They need something new to change who they are.
They're oversaturated, maybe.
Yeah. I am a former Starbucks barista. And interestingly enough, when I worked there over a decade ago, it did feel like the smaller coffee shop thing. You actually had to pull the espresso shots by hand. You didn't just push a button, and everything's so automated and everything's so McDonald-ized about Starbucks now. And their prices are going up, and then you're putting more and more sugar in things. Listen, sometimes you just want a normal latte. And these local companies, these local like coffee shops and things, they're really stepping up their coffee game. And these beans they're bringing in and they're roasting, they're excellent.
Howard Schultz needs to be listening to this. HB, do you drink Starbucks?
I do a lot. And I know he was talking about just overall Starbucks numbers, not just coffee with actual beans and whatnot. But they are introducing a lot of really, a lot of summer drinks that has no coffee in it. So if, in fact, people are drinking less coffee, then maybe that's part of the reason he just keeps introducing these sugary drinks that has nothing to do with coffee.
Exactly.
What do you order when you're at Starbucks?
Just tall pie place. I'm the cheap person. And sit there for 3 hours.
That would be a journalist. Does she get free Wi-Fi?
There will come a time when caffeine will once again be deemed unhealthy in a serious way. About 10 years, it'll come.
Yeah, but will we listen to it? I don't know. In any case, let's move on to a story about the news. The very news that's supposedly driving down Starbucks sales. American intelligence officers now say they have enough information to declare that Russian spies were behind the recent hack of DNC emails. And then it was WikiLeaks that published the emails on its websites. The emails show DNC officials criticizing Bernie Sanders during his primary campaign against Clinton. WikiLeaks founder Julian Assange, an Australian, implied during a recent interview that the hacks were intended to damage Clinton's chances of winning.
She has pushed for the prosecution of WikiLeaks, which is still in train. So we do see her as a bit of a problem for freedom of the press more generally.
So, look, this is an Australian talking about a potential president of the United States, and the hack came from Russian spies. What do we feel about this foreign intervention?
I feel like he doesn't know what he's talking about. If he's worried about freedom of the press, he is backing the wrong person.
Well, this just comes as Trump bounced a Washington Post journalist from
from his rally.
Not the first time. And I mean, there is no chance that Trump is sympathetic to any constitutional right that does not amount to, you know, a buck. I mean, there just isn't. So he's backing the wrong guy.
Well, you're a dyed-in-the-wool Democrat. So
fair enough.
Kathy, what do you think?
Well, it upsets me that Trump has not just banned the Washington Post, but pretty much a dozen media.
Yeah, many.
But if this is a hack that's trying to interfere with the U.S. election, I mean, it's a terrible sign. I mean, I don't know if that's what it is. I know that there are hackers that have Russian hackers that have been accused of interfering with European elections for a long time.
Yeah,
it could. Who knows?
I think we're just dealing with a new reality that we're just gonna have to face from now. Because if we assume that they did it, and if they could, why wouldn't they? Borders are coming down in many different ways, and corporations are really now much larger entities sometimes than many of the governments. Really, even political issues, I don't think there is a clear separation between, as long as there's an interest for a party and they have the means to intervene, then they will, and I think that's just the new reality.
And, you know, those interests could just be, you know, a hacker or a hacking team that does not necessarily have to be government-backed. They could just be bored and say, let's see what chaos I can bring upon this thing. You know what I mean? Maybe they are Russian hackers, but they may be a Russian hacking group or two people in a basement
The intelligence officials did tie them back to the Russian spy agency.
But to the extent the Russian government was trying to interfere in American elections in this kind of way, we've been doing this to other countries in various ways for 50 years.
Fair enough. All right. So this is the kind of story that maybe you don't want to hear, frankly, because there's a new study from the National Bureau of Economic Research that finds people who regularly follow the news are way more likely to be depressed about the future. For example, media coverage of negative events can make people feel anxious and to believe that trouble is right around the corner. So, is this enough to make you take a break from the headlines every once in a while? Because I know all four of you are the kind of people that follow headlines, some of us because it's our profession. But is this enough to set everything down and walk away over the weekends, for example?
Yes.
So
that's coming from a journal.
So I was at a dude ranch in southern Colorado where there was no internet access, literally, for a week. There was a tiny, tiny bit in the main lodge for 10 seconds, then it was gone. So we went to the horrible things in Dallas and all that, we didn't hear about.
Oh, my gosh.
And I do have to say, and I do rock and radio shows once a week almost, I do have to say there was something exhilarating about not knowing. I mean, there was something like
that. Actually, sounds fabulous.
There was, especially that week, which was a horrible week in America. So,
you know what's funny about that is something like that to me actually sounds horrible. Like having no internet access to me, like that, because I'm a communicative person.
You're a millennial, though, are you not?
Yeah,
in the millennial generation?
I am. So that sounds like I would go through a withdrawal symptom big time. And even though
I mean, it's probably wrong for me to assume you're addicted to social media,
but I also say yes, these news stories are very depressing, and there are times where I'm like, oh, I just need to walk away from Facebook. And every 2 days, I contemplate completely closing my Facebook account. But then something draws me back in. So maybe I am addicted. Who knows?
I have a fear of, in the same instance, if I was having a moment like Eric was having, I think I was going to have a fear of when somebody brings something up, a big major news that just about everybody seems to know, then I don't know, then I think I'm going to be, because of my job, I'll be afraid of falling behind.
And that's fair. And I was actually in the Caribbean when a lot of things happened and mountains, Justice Scalia died. I do feel like if I'm not able to comment publicly on Twitter or Facebook or blogs, that my career is in jeopardy. But having said that, in the beautiful surroundings of Colorado with rivers and lakes and horses, there was something.
Yeah, see, that sounds like a slice of heaven.
There was
something
liberating.
Or I can just say, sorry.
I was recently at a lake in Missouri, beautiful, and there was very little internet access, and we were way off the road, and it was a long way to get to anywhere, and it was actually really quite nice.
I actually turn my phone off regularly over the weekend, but we want to hear from the listeners out there. Do you ever give yourself a break from headlines? Do you walk away from the internet? You can tweet us at
I just haven't tried being completely
You can
off.
Catch up.
Yeah.
It's Friday. We are hanging out in the break room. My guests are H.B. Cho of The Korean Daily, former NPR correspondent Kathy Lohr, Kalina Baller of The Real Snobs podcast, and Eric Siegel of Georgia State University. Speaking of Colorado, let's talk about pot. The agriculture industry is a huge part of Georgia's economy, obviously hugely important here. That's because we've got a great climate, lots of sunlight, good soil. Crops like blueberries do very well here. We're the number one blueberry state. Peaches, pecans, obviously. But it could be that Georgia is missing out on another cash crop.
Say, man, you got a joint?
No, not on me, man.
It'd be a lot cooler if you did.
So it turns out Atlanta is the 10th best city for growing marijuana in the nation. It is still illegal here, though, to grow marijuana. Let me repeat that for everyone listening. It is illegal to grow marijuana.
But not to take pictures of women's skirts.
In Georgia. Fair enough.
So backwards.
I wonder, look, let's leave all the morality out of it. Are we missing out on a valuable crop?
Yes. Yes, we are.
Okay.
I've actually mentioned this on this show several months ago. We brought up a topic similar to this, whether or not farmers who need extra income or something like that, whether they should consider pushing for legislation that would allow them to grow marijuana crops for medical purposes or something like that. And I said, absolutely. I mean, it's a no-brainer to me. Like you said, we have the perfect climate. There's obviously a growing marketplace out there, not just recreationally, but medically. And, you know, the strains that are, you know, needed and that are sought after can easily grow here.
I think there is so much data. This is a pet peeve of Pete Dominic, our friend. Drug companies that make painkillers are the ones who are fighting against making marijuana legal in places, because they know that if you're sick, and you know that pot is way more effective in every way, less addictive, and not a single human being in the history of the planet has died from a pot overdose.
Come on and preach it.
And opiate deaths are rising. Why? It's inevitable. It's going to happen. Can for just one time can Georgia get out a little bit in front, or not in front, or, you know, just a little bit in front, and do the right thing? Just one time.
Pete Dominic is a radio host on Sirius. Go ahead.
I don't think so. Here's the state fact sheet. It says federal law makes it illegal to grow marijuana, and there's a whole the state.
This
puts
is
these
printed
out.
From the state website.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And the penalties.
We're radio. They can't see you holding up those documents.
So, sorry. But, you know, so I don't know how soon the state's going to be willing to.
Why can't we do it once? Why can't we be up in out in front once? Just one time on one issue, somewhere, someday.
We can.
Come on. Georgia's been in front on other
Name
stuff.
One.
I can't. I'm not thinking of it now, but I'm sure. Hey, electric cars.
Okay.
Yeah.
Good for you.
Thank you.
I couldn't think of one either.
I will say this. From what my limited experience in Colorado, 1 week, there were as many ways to use this product that didn't involve smoking as there was to involve smoking. It does make me think that not just crops are, well, this is serious, though. I mean, it may be that non-crop use of this product will exceed crop use eventually. But the point is, it's really for people in pain. I mean, that's what people in pain should be able to get this drug.
Absolutely. I agree with you. And because we have the climate, we can grow it here, and we can grow some excellent strains here.
How do you know?
I just know.
Okay, we're going to move on to a very controversial subject this week. First Lady Michelle Obama spoke on the first night of the Democratic National Convention. There was one or two sentences in that speech that have since made headlines.
I wake up every morning in a house that was built by slaves. And I watch my daughters, two beautiful, intelligent black young women, playing with their dogs on the White House lawn.
Now, historical documents support her statement. It is true that slaves, in large part, built the White House. But Fox host Bill O'Reilly, along with many others, took offense.
Slaves that worked there were well-fed and had decent lodgings provided by the government.
Okay, so here's my question. Let's get away from what we think necessarily of Bill O'Reilly. But I got a whole bunch of tweets from people who are very angry about that statement. They said it wasn't just slaves. There were other people involved, which is true. That's fair enough. But my question is, why does this upset people so much? Why can't you just say categorically, because it's factual, the White House was built in large part by slaves, and not have people get upset? Why?
I've studied and written about race in America from the beginning. And because for some reason, even in 2016, people want to deny that the number one public policy issue in 1787, 1865, 1925, and 2016 in this country is race. So anything that triggers that idea that we're still fighting about race gets people really upset. And I'm being dead serious now. It has always been the number one public policy issue in America and continues to be, and that upsets people.
I have to say, this is one of the most outrageous statements. I know you said, you know,
Bill O'Reilly saying they were well fed.
But I think now you're going to think this is really crazy. I think it's like the people that say Sandy Hook never happened. And it is that people want to disassociate themselves from these events.
Just denial.
Slavery.
Yes.
Yeah. Yes.
Straight up.
And the truth is that slavery was responsible for much of the economic prosperity for white landowners in the South and other places in the
everywhere.
Country.
We actually don't have any historical evidence to know whether they were well-fed and whether their lodgings were decent. There's no proof of that.
I actually saw some writings, and I can't remember who was quoting it, but it was maybe the First Lady at the time, saying these slaves don't look like they're very well fed. So it's really interesting.
What difference does it make anyway?
And yes, yeah. And as a matter of fact,
even if they were well fed and given housing, they weren't slaves. They were slaves. They had no, you know, free will of their own. They couldn't go to and fro without papers. You know what I mean? And this is okay. Kalina, calm down.
You know, my high school history teacher had. When we were going through, when we're talking about this period of the history, he insists upon telling us how there were so the conditions were a lot nicer than is depicted.
Yeah, that's what I don't get.
Yes, yes.
And I think he, I remember being confused why that he was so insistent on that.
It is a question. I mean, we're out of time, but it is a question. And definitely, if you have thoughts out there while you're listening, you need to get them to us. We are. This is The Break Room. We're out of time. I want to say thanks to our guests. You just heard H.B. Cho of The Korean Daily, former NPR correspondent Kathy Lohr. Eric Siegel is a constitutional law professor at Georgia State University, and Kalina Baller, co-host of the Real Snobs podcast. But again, get us your thoughts about this. I would love to hear them on whatever side you come from. Call us at 404-500-9457. Tweet us at OST Talk. You can tweet straight to me. It's at Celeste Headley. For today and the week, it's On Second Thought from GPB News. I'm Celeste Headley. Have a great weekend.